You're listening to The Tech Agenda with Ian Kyo, powered by PwC. The Currency.news. It pays to be curious.
Artificial intelligence is everywhere right now. Every company is talking about it. They're investing in it. They're experimenting with it. But here's the reality. Most of them aren't actually seeing meaningful returns. PwC's latest global AI performance study shows that nearly three quarters of the value created by AI is being captured by just 20% of companies. So the question isn't who's using AI, it's who's using it well. To discuss this and unpack the details of the survey, I'm delighted to be joined in studio for this episode of The Tech Agenda by David Lee, Chief Technology Officer at PwC Ireland. David, you're very welcome.
Thank you, Ian.
I was reading the survey and I was going through the data and it struck me. And I'm going to start off with a scenario for you. Imagine two companies. They're both investing in artificial intelligence. They're both running pilots. They're both exploring the same technologies. One is generating real revenue growth and reshaping its business model, and the other seems to be still stuck in experimentation. And I think that's something that comes across from this survey, which shows that 74% of AI's value is going to 20% of companies. What's driving this difference?
Yeah, good question to start with. And let me try and unpack that in over the next few minutes. So we obviously were intrigued as well to see that the differential was so high, that such a small percentage of organizations were accounting for such a high percent of the return. If we talk first to the return, importantly, it's not just efficiency gains. It's organizations who've also looked at it as a tool of reinvention. So not only are they taking cost out of the organization, but they're also generating new revenue streams from the application of AI. So we looked at then in terms of what differentiated those organizations from those that were not. And broadly, there was two set of differentiation factors. One, how they used AI. And then secondly, the foundations that they've built within their own organizations upon which to apply the use of AI. So if I talk briefly to the uses of AI and how that differentiates them from other organizations, they broadly fall into three areas. First is the breadth of usage within the organization. So we look at most organizations, they tend to start in back office functions, whether that be finance, HR or IT.
Or it's not customer facing, it's just, can I do something quicker, more efficiently?
Correct, yeah. So like people would be understandably reserved about trying a new technology on their customers. So the logical starting point was to look in back office functions where effectively you were doing it in a safer environment. But the reality of the organizations that are actually seeing the return is that they are going beyond the back office. They're applying it in front office, customer-facing settings, and also back into the supply chain. The second area, I suppose, that would differentiate them in terms of is just the complexity of use cases to which they're applying the technology. So your opening comments, you talked about the use cases that are out there. It's a term that we use loosely, but there's a fundamental difference between organizations who are using it in a true end-to-end manner within their organizations. So unfortunately, like most things in life, the prize is in the complex, and the same is true of AI. So those organizations who've actually stood back and tried to solve the more complex problems are those that are seeing a return. And I think in this context, there's a much quoted MIT survey which says 95% of AI programs have failed, which is a great headline. Well, sufficiently, I suppose, attractive for me to go and read the report. But in the report, it actually got beyond the why. And what they found was that organizations were not being sufficiently ambitious in terms of where they were applying AI.
But that begs a question, David, as to where and how you define value.
Yeah.
And you've mentioned a few of those things in your introduction, your remarks. You know, value can be cost savings, revenue growth. It can be something broader. And even trying to define that sort of value piece from AI in such an embryonic technology can be difficult.
It can. And I said, if you look at the sort of the kind of evolution of value in an AI setting, it has tended to start with measures of adoption, measures of usage, which largely were in the personal productivity sense space. So very difficult to argue at this point that the use of an AI tool does not help your individual personal productivity. Very hard, though, to translate personal productivity to a level of enterprise return.
So I can get, just to put it into into a different way, I can get something, I can get it to rewrite something or give me some pointers, which is great for me.
Yeah.
But how does that apply to my corporation behind me?
Exactly that. So in terms of how do you actually go from that place of being a tool of personal productivity to a tool that actually sees a return on investment from an organizational point of view?
And that comes, I think that comes back to mindset, David. I think one of the key themes in the study is that this isn't about access to the technology. The technology is there. It's about how companies using it and about how those leading organizations are doing it differently in their approach.
Yeah, doing it differently, because you're right. It's not about the tool. It's about how you apply it. If I sit here today and talk about the tools, it'll be a very different outlook to if we sit here in 3 months' time.
So I'd worry less. Because it is moving that fast. It's
moving that fast. It may be the same name on the tin, but the functionality, capability that's underneath it is significantly different month on month. If I go back to just your question in terms of how you measure value for something that's so embryonic, we use the risk is we use traditional measures. We look at things like return on investment, which you've been using since Moses was a boy to actually see a return on investment. There is an evolving school which says there's a value in the learning from the use of the technology that will sustain beyond the advances in technology. So you see people starting to talk about return on experimentation. So by starting and learning, you bank the learning as the technology evolves. Because the risk in something like this, Ian, is that people will wait until the technology gets better and not start.
And that kind of, that's an interesting point. It's one I hadn't heard before, but it takes you beyond that. I can achieve growth, I can achieve efficiency.
Yeah.
Now you're saying I can achieve something different, which will have more meaningful, potentially more meaningful returns for my company over a longer period if I engage with this.
Yeah, because if you look at the inhibitors traditionally in the space, it has been about the upskilling of organization and the changing, to use your own term, of the mindset within an organization. You're only going to trust the redesign of your organization to a technology you understand. You'll only understand the technology if you use it, not read about it. And therefore, by using it, you build an understanding, not just of its power, but also of its limitations.
Where does that go, though, between that experimentation piece and implementation?
Yeah.
If you see where I'm coming from, so everyone's experimenting with it.
Yeah.
I see it in my own company. I see it in other companies. People are just going, they're going in and they're checking out things, or they're using Claude, they're using whatever, but or Copilot, they're experimenting. It's that juxtaposition between that experimentation and implementation.
Yeah. And I think
maybe that understands that differential between who's benefiting from AI.
Yeah.
And who's not.
So if we look, say, in an Irish context, we ran a survey in the local market before Christmas. And again, consistently and persistently, we'd see somewhere between 10 and 15% of organizations have scaled. In other words, something like 80% to 85% of organizations have not.
Have not.
So if you then stand back and say, what are the inhibitors to that? The inhibitors to that, when you probe people, is that one, I suppose, is understanding where to get the return. We've spoken a little about in terms of to get a return, you have to focus it on a broader set of areas than maybe people would have started with. But then legitimate concerns around just the governance around its use. Organisations have worked hard to build relationships of trust with their employees, with their customers, and in certain industries with their regulators. They're not going to risk those relationships by an inappropriate use of the technology. So again, when we went back and looked at the features of organisations that are being successful in this place, they built the foundations. So I talked about earlier about how they've applied it probably in a different way or to different opportunities than other organisations have. But they've also invested time in the hard stuff, like building the foundations. AI without data or without trusted data is of limited value. So these organisations have invested in the plumbing. Get the data right so that you can actually rely on the insights that you're getting from the AI that runs over that technology. They are investing in the upskilling of their people. They are investing. So they're actually spending money. And they're having an investment outlook which says, we do need to see a return here, but we're going to take a broad view on the return. The return can be in terms of revenue we generate, cost we save, or learning we accrue.
It's funny, just as you speak there, something strikes me because it's easy to turn around. You said at the start, look at headlines and, you know, 70% are, 30% aren't, and so on and so forth. We still at such an early, are such, sorry, we are still at such an early stage of this technology and this advancement that, like, we wouldn't have been having this conversation 3 years ago.
Correct. The technology still is at its early stages of evolution. The risk on that, though, is that you'll stand back and say, let's wait until it evolves further. Yeah. So for me, I suppose the standout is that if you look across the survey that you referenced at the top, it's a global survey. We've over 1,000 organizations participated in it. And you can see 1 in 5 of those organizations is seeing a meaningful return. Because they've actually got ahead and they haven't taken the mindset of let's see and wait how this develops. But they've actually gone after it in a controlled way with the right foundations, the right guide rails to ensure that it isn't being used in an inappropriate or unsustainable way.
And also
way.
From the survey, David, they're also embedding it in the business as opposed to just layering it on top and, oh, I hate to use the phrase, but just adding another plug-in or there's something else. They're actually making it mission critical or core to their business.
I'm glad you picked up on that from the reading of it, because, again, if you look at the risk is this is seeing as another technology. So the organizations who are seeing a return are seeing this as a business tool, not as a technology tool. And that manifests itself in a number of ways. One, in terms of the alignment with what they're doing in the technology AI space with what they're setting as a business direction. But even more fundamental things like the governance groups that they put in place to oversee the use of the technology draw not just on the technology folks in the organization, but have appropriate business representations who can then assess both the use of it and also the return on that.
The other point I want to talk about is reinvention. And it's another buzzword. It's another phrase that's been in vogue for years. But I think it was striking from the survey that it showed the business leaders are 2.5 times more likely to say that AI is helping them reinvent their business model.
Yeah.
I'm just curious, what does reinvention in that phrase, in that sense, look like?
So in simple terms, it's not about doing things faster or more efficiently. It's about doing things differently. So again, to the mindset, you stand back and say, let's not just take the process that we have currently and see how we can apply AI to make it better or faster. It's actually to go back to first principles and saying, can we do this in an entirely different way so that we end up with a much different offering, whether that be to how we support our employees, how we go to market, how we engage back in terms of reporting back to regulators, etc. So it's just a mindset change of actually looking at things differently as opposed to looking at it just as a tool of efficiency. Yeah.
I want to ask you about automation, because I think this is really interesting and I think it will strike a chord with a lot of what normal workers and their bosses and the boards that oversee them.
Yeah.
Because just, again, going through the survey, you found that leading companies are far more likely to increase the number of decisions made without human intervention.
Yeah.
It's a big thing to say. So what kinds of decisions are we talking about in that sense? And it begs another question, how comfortable should companies be about making decisions in the absence of human intervention?
Yeah, so maybe if I just start with a few data points on that. When we ran our own local survey that I referenced earlier, one of the surprising findings we had was that less than 10% of respondents were happy to use AI in an autonomous way, even for very basic decisions. So not sort of, I put this in a financial services footing, not to make a decision as to whether someone gets a mortgage or not, not to make a decision in a healthcare setting as to whether someone has a diagnosis or not. Just a resistance to using without the human in the loop. We're seeing, I suppose, in terms of the evidence from the survey, that those are actually that being a bit more, I suppose, ambitious in that space, are seeing the return. It's not that they're reckless. It's, as I was saying earlier, they've actually put in place the right foundations. So that the right controls to ensure that when the technology is developed and deployed in an autonomous way, they have a means of ensuring that it behaves in a consistent manner.
But it's their technology. It's not, you know, and I think, just speaking as somebody who has toyed around with ChatGPT or whatever, when companies are building their own LLMs or their own systems, they can set it up to act like they want it to act.
Yeah.
As opposed to just going on to ChatGPT. What should I do?
Yeah. Well, I suppose,
and maybe that's overly simplistic, but I'm just trying to bring it down to brass tacks.
I just say probably it's probably a slightly different mindset to if you think of when you developed and delivered traditional technologies. the effort went into the design and the test. And then you, with a level of certainty, you knew how it would operate in a live environment, which are typical standard control checks. The mindset is now different in an AI world, that when you deploy the technology, your work is not done. You have to keep monitoring to ensure that it behaves in a consistent and expected manner within boundaries. So one of the things that we're working with our clients on is actually that just that afterlife, that after you go live, how do you ensure you've got the right controls and checks and balances
in place? That brings up two big words, trust, governance.
Yeah.
How do companies approach this? And I know it's something that the survey deals with, but it's a big issue, I think, particularly at a boardroom level.
Yeah. So, again, trust. And I think I mentioned earlier that trust applies not just in terms of how you face off externally, but as importantly, in terms of how you face off to your own employees. It is hard to read media without getting a concern about, will AI replace my job? And that's whether you're operating at a relatively junior level or a senior level in the organization. So the investment in making people comfortable with the technology, again, you'll have seen from the survey, one of the differentiator between those, that 20% who are seeing the return and those that are not, is that their own employees are more likely to trust the technology than those in other organizations. And that's a consequence of those organizations having investing in both the upskilling of their employees, but also giving them the comfort that the appropriate checks and balances are in place to ensure that it operates in a consistent manner, and in a manner that's, I suppose, aligned with what the business is seeking to achieve from an objectives perspective, but as important, probably with the value set that's in an organization, that it operates in an ethical, predictable manner and doesn't expose the organization.
Okay, so we've talked a lot about companies who are doing it well. Mm. What happens if you're listening to this podcast, they're getting free advice from you, the Chief Technology Officer at BWC Ireland, and they're saying, oh my goodness, I haven't engaged with this at all. I've been looking at it. I assumed it would come to me at some point. I'm now seeing my rivals and my competitors are doing it. They're getting a competitive advantage. First base basis, what do they need to be doing?
Yeah, so if they're starting from base zero, there is no substitute for using it. You talked about your own personal usage. By using it, you get an appreciation. So I would say most definitely doing nothing is not an option. Start with the right mindset. Think of it not just as a tool of efficiency. Think about how can we use it to do things differently, not just faster. Do invest in the boring stuff. Do think through the governance. Do think what you need to do with data. Don't trade your trust easily, but don't hide behind it either. So start with my only.
And I have two final questions, but you mentioned data. I think it's the fourth or fifth time you've brought it up. This only works with data.
Yeah.
You know, everything is only, like an Excel spreadsheet is only as good as the data that goes into it. And your AI model is only as good as the data that goes into it.
Yeah. So historically, I suppose organizations have always known that they should be doing more with the governance management of the data that they have. They now actually have a need and an incentive for doing that. It can be overwhelming. Most organizations would stand back and say it's very hard to undo the sins of 30 years in a year. So what the organizations, I suppose, that have been successful in this space is that they focus on the data that's important to the business need that they're trying to address through AI. Yeah. So like that famous elephant, bite it off in chunks.
And finally, Ireland. How are Irish companies, just bringing it closer to home, but how are Irish companies performing in this space compared to their global peers?
Yeah. So Irish organisations participated in the survey that we've been chatting through. We'd find them broadly consistent with the overall average. A few noticeable differences, though. One, and it builds on the data point, we obviously operate in a very different regulatory and legislative environment in a European setting compared to our colleagues in North America. So you would see differences in adoption levels as a consequence of that. We're probably more discerning when it comes to, let's see, a return. We're not willing to just go and try and hope for the best. We like to have, a level of expectation that we can measure a return and see a return.
So, David, you've been in this industry for quite some time, finally. You've seen ups, downs, technologies that have been in vogue, technologies that have fallen out of vogue. When you're sitting around and you're chatting to people, be it at the dinner table or wherever else, how do you explain the advancement of AI and where it's going now?
So there's a law out there called Amara's Law, which says the impact of technology is overestimated in the short term and underestimated in the long term. I think that very well defines AI. We're only beginning to understand its capabilities. Certainly some of the potential gets overstated at the start. We get disappointed. But you mentioned earlier, like if we had this conversation 3 years ago, it would be a very different conversation. If we had this conversation 6 months ago, it would be a very different conversation. The tools that are probably in most listeners' hands at the moment have evolved hugely even in the last 3 months.
Okay, and that's a big lesson for businesses. Mm. David Lee, Chief Technology Officer at PwC Ireland, thank you very much for joining me for this episode of The Tech Agenda.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Tech Agenda with Ian Keogh. Powered by PwC, thecurrency.news. It pays to be curious.